The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM Channel 158. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. I know I appreciate it. Gil Alexander. Still to come, Steve Fezzik will join us, the star of Fezzik Fridays. He's got a lot on his mind. Always does. Sports betting, beyond. Man's got opinions. And he does them in a far kinder way than he does them on Twitter, I will say that. And then Tony Farmer will join us a little before that, earlier. Tony not only has his Survivor podcast, which is very popular, but he's also a sort of aspiring investigative reporter. Let's call him a mini Pablo Torre. He's been obsessed with a couple stories this offseason, and he does his own sort of investigative work with it, like takes it very seriously. And he's almost more that than he is a podcaster at this point. So we'll talk to Tony. He'll be in studio. Looking forward to that here coming up. First, though, let us talk college football from an analytical perspective. Aaron Schatz is the creator of DVOA, which we know and love very well. Aaron's been on the show many times, too many to count, to talk DVOA with us in pro football. Well, this gentleman used to work with Aaron, and he developed his own proprietary stat that he applies to college football called SP Plus. Bill Connolly joining us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Bill, good morning. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Doing very well. Was that an accurate sort of backstory there on SP Plus?
Yeah, that worked. Used to have an ampersand, then, you know, had to remove that for cease and desist related reasons, but we're good. SP Plus is good.
Okay. Can you explain, just so you know, I know DVOA is analyzing each and every play in pro football on a granular level against league average. SP is similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, yeah, it's a per-play thing. It's opponent-adjusted. It's tempo-adjusted. And the idea, I think the only real difference in approach between SP Plus and DVOA is I try to translate to a point figure, like how many points you're above or below the kind of the average team in FBS. And you know, I know Aaron uses a percentage. That's about the only difference.
Okay. I want to get to SP Plus vis-a-vis season win totals and where the biggest differences might lurk. But let's just talk about the top of college football to begin with. I think you might be able to see on a screen there. These are the odds to win the national championship. The usual suspects: Ohio State, Notre Dame, the short shots at 6-1, Texas plus 650, Oregon plus 750, Georgia and Indiana rounding out the single digit teams, followed by Miami and LSU there on the first column. How does SP Plus rank the top of college football this year?
Yeah, pretty similar. I think it has Texas a little bit lower, mainly because it really just did not like Texas at all until late last season. The October run of mediocrity really kind of dragged their ratings down a little bit. It reminded us that for how good Arch may have looked at the end of the season, that was temporary. We need to see that's permanent.
Yes, we do.
But then the other main thing that I noticed with, you know, the kind of the over the summer updates that I made to SP Plus for these final ones, every time I've made a little tweak, just based on, you know, can I do conference adjustments or this or that a little better? Every time I made a tweak, Ohio State got better. And so they ended up kind of pulling away from the pack a little bit in terms of that top spot. And then Oregon's pretty comfortably too. And then everybody else is kind of bunched together from there.
Let me do a sort of aside here, parenthetical aside, just from projection standpoint. So even in the year, in the era of transfer portals, generally, your priors are pretty predictive?
That's been surprisingly, yes. I mean, because every year we get a new data set with, you know, how do teams react when they have 50 new transfers and whatnot. And those teams are definitely more volatile. But yeah, I mean, I think SP Plus last year, just in terms of like game to game error rates, that was probably its best season since 2019. So that was really good to see. I mean, the projections are good. Preseason projections are pretty good. And then, you know, it adjusts throughout the season pretty well too. So happily, I can say it still performs pretty well. Although, you know, against the spread is a little trickier now because the lines are so much better.
Yeah. Bill, by the way, you can follow on Twitter at @ESPN_BillC. One last sort of in the weeds question, because I feel like it'd be more awkward not to ask this because I just asked it of a previous guest. And I asked this of Aaron when he's on, Dr. Bob, when he's on projecting college and pro football. When do your priors slough off? Like, when does the actual, you know, game on the field for the given season start to take over for you?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it takes a while. Obviously, we're dealing with tiny samples, but it takes basically the full season for them to really be all the way phased out. And I hate that. In principle, I'd like everything to stand on its own after like a month, but yeah. Kind of had to accept that if you want to make actually good projections and fare well over the course of the season, they need to stay in there a bit longer. So by the time we're to November, it's, 70% this season, but there's still a hefty amount of those priors, of those preseason projections in there.
Okay. Let's start with, I'll get to the season loss. What about week zero? Do you see some edges in the week zero lines?
A little bit. One of the interesting things when I put things together this week, it's basically SP Plus is like 1 point friendlier to the underdogs in most of the games, which isn't enough to really go on, obviously. But that was one thing I noticed, TCU -7.5, but SP Plus has it like TCU by 5.8, stuff like that. But really the major differences were, there's like a 3-point difference with the Hawaii Stanford game. It has Stanford by 2.9. And last I saw the line there was like -6. And USC is like 2.5 points off, towards San Jose State, which I don't really like. I don't think San Jose State's going to be trustworthy in that regard. If we're looking for anything interesting in the first week, I do think there were some pretty big differences in the point totals, which I never really know to trust or not this early. But, it has, North Dakota State, Jacksonville State quite a bit ahead of the over-under there. But now early on, we're pretty much within about 2 points for most of the games.
Oh, meaning your number, you're way over the actual total is what you're saying.
Yeah, like way over on North Dakota State and pretty far under with USC, which I do kind of that one a little bit because USC doesn't move fast. So even if they win a blowout, it might not get all that prolific.
Okay, let's go back to the season loss because this is very interesting. So beyond the teams at the top, you mentioned Texas, you might have a little lower. What was a team that you have, super higher projected than the actual market does?
Well, where's Texas Tech at right now? Because I still have them really high. They got downgraded after the Sorsby situation, especially in the polls. It felt like they basically got punished in the polls by losing their starting quarterback twice at the end of last season, then and again over the summer. But that's one where I found kind of interesting differences. And also, SP Plus does not trust Ole Miss right now very much at all. And that's mainly because of this factor I kind of baked in to handle the coaching changes and it's basically like Ole Miss had its best coach in 50 years, just leave. And usually almost every time that ever happens, you fall off pretty quickly. And so it bumped them down to 16th overall with a win total of, 7.2, which I think is a decent amount lower than the last win total I saw for Ole Miss. So that is one that and it might turn out that you have Chambliss and Lacey and nothing else matters and they're really awesome again, but that's one I've been keeping an eye on.
Yeah, their win total is 7.5, but the under the under is plus money, so that still might be enough for people to go with. To answer your question about Texas Tech, they're 22-1 to win it all. They're about the ninth team on the big board. I'm curious, the middle of the SEC. You had a little write-up on them in your piece at ESPN on SP Plus. What was that all about?
Yeah, it's just the middle of the SEC is really, really hard to predict because it's a whole bunch of teams that are very, very similar quality. And so Georgia and Texas start off ahead of the pack. Texas's schedule makes them really hard to trust from a big win totals perspective. I have Georgia at 9.9. And then basically, that we have nine teams between 7 and 8.7 wins after that, because it's just going to 50% of all SEC games last year were decided by one score. It really is just going to be who catches fire with the right kicker and who can run a good 4-minute drill at the end of a given game. They're going to win a lot of close games and kind of overachieve, but it's really choose your fighter there. They're all right around 7 to 8.
Yeah. What is it? It's as murky as we think. In other words.
Yeah.
What's your sense of, because one of the biggest, if not the biggest college football question when all is said and done with the regular season this year will be how will the committee treat, three-loss SEC teams? This is a non-SP Plus question, but what is your hunch on that?
Yeah, it is going to be, and we're going to get that. That's going to be a narrative all season because somebody's going to lose between Texas and Ohio State in week two and then have a lot more big games to play after that, especially with Texas. They, you know, they were complaining about this at the end of last season. So, yeah, that really is. I'm not going to say, like, you know, Texas, especially with how hard their schedule is taking shape. Not every SEC team has that level of schedule. But that is going to be kind of the major question we have. And I'm assuming, especially if it's Texas and they're 9-3 and they've beaten two or three really good teams and lost to three good teams, I'm kind of guessing the committee will smile on them a little bit because, number one, we do know they kind of they listen to voices sometimes outside of that room, it seems like. And you know, it's just it's going to be really, really – man, I don't think they're going to – I think they're going to be ahead of some of the 10-2 teams, especially in the ACC and Big 12. Let's put it that way. And how that all plays out, how many 11-1, 10-2 teams there are, we don't really know, but I think they'll be ahead of a decent number of two-loss teams.
Last question. I'll put you on the spot here. Is there a team in a smaller conference that, based on SB Plus, you think is a good bet to win the conference that stands out as you peruse your numbers?
Well, excuse me, everything I just said about the SEC, you can kind of say about the Big 12 too. Like, I, you know, there's a clear front runner there. But after that, just a whole bunch of teams in that kind of projected 4.9 to 5.4 conference wins range. So if you're feeling particularly good about one of those, whether it's Utah, whether it's Arizona, TCU is really interesting to me. I feel like they're extremely volatile. Big 12 is a good conference for taking a risk in that regard.
Bill, appreciate it very much. Thanks for taking the time. By the way, if you want to delve in, because this is a very sort of surface level analysis, he does a deep dive. Final preseason college football SP Plus rankings takeaways for 2026 over at ESPN.com. Bill Connolly. Bill, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too. Tony Farmer on deck.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Do not sleep on the sharp plays. Unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info, and alerts directly from the pros. Check them out. Sharpplays.com. You can scan the QR code on your screen for more. We get tweets beating the book. Best listeners in the game. Have I said that yet today? Abigail. Man, that was a fun watch, the Futures Draft yesterday. Great group of people with the content we all want. I do like the idea of next year being in a ballroom. And the big Swede, Dustin Swedelson, announces each pick from the podium. More. Bakai had the line of the night. Yeah, he did. Again, fantasy football team. Humans is colon. Los Vegas 514. Yo, news from home. This is from DC, the DMV, everybody, when he says home. Formula One and this Freedom 250 Grand Prix race is taking over our city this weekend. I sure hope they didn't do what Vegas did and sign a 10-year deal to have this ridiculousness after this year. Sheesh. Oh, boy. I hope you're right, man. Because it for those of us who live on the Strip or around the Strip, good God. Yeah. I think they're keeping it here for 10 years. After the 3-year mark, sometimes they get out of it. But, yeah, I think it's staying for 10 here. That's fun. This is from, got to forward ahead here. Again, most of these are all people racing to bet Carlos Alcaraz at big numbers wherever books were asleep. In case you missed it, again, the big news this morning, Yannick Sinner saying that he is pulling out. By the way, I should mention this, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show or if this was off air. I think I might have mentioned this on the show. But on prediction markets, about 4 days ago, someone was pounding the no on Sinner playing. And someone knew something. And this is the thing about prediction markets. There is a quote-unquote insider trading, right? Somebody knew something that preceded this announcement, and prediction markets, interestingly, getting it right once again on that. This is from Tony Tags, logged into Kalshi, speaking of prediction markets, logged into Kalshi yesterday to tail your tennis just to find out it's no longer available. Oh, wow. In Washington State. Citing the 2006 internet gambling laws. It was fun while it lasted. Back to VPNs and faraway places, I guess. I was unaware of that bit of news. Carlos. Let's see. Shrek, is this insane to think Houston paying Stroud $200 million will have the simple ripple effect as Watson does in Cleveland? He's not even the best quarterback on their roster. They're going to waste an elite wide receiver and top two defense. Certainly an opinion on that for sure. Let's see here. We'll get to more of these. Last one, Pittsburgh Billy. Heard some hard knocks talk over the last week. I stopped watching it during COVID because it started sucking like a lot of things at the time. I think it's really good this season. Give it another try. Tell Todd I'll see him. Dan Rivers. Okay. I will give Hard Knocks. You're not the first person to say this. So I'll give Hard Knocks another try with the Seattle Seahawks this season. This gentleman is kind enough to join us in studio for a few segments. He is not only the host of the Last Man Standing podcast, which talks about Survivor above and beyond, which was just a great idea to lean into Survivor. But he's also the host of Saturday Night Sweat. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony's Market Tips. It's the great Tony Farmer in studio. Tony, what's happening?
Not too much, man. I'm glad to be here with you, Gil. We're a couple weeks away from my favorite time of year.
Yeah, which is all about Survivor. By the way, I was going to save this for later, but did I hear that you are entering Grandissimo?
I am. First time ever. I had a friend approach me and said, you should do Grandissimo. And I'm like, I don't have $100,000 lying around. He's like, you've got an audience. You've got a great track record. You can put up some of the money, get a team together. So that's exactly what I did. We're fully funded, and I'll be signing up during Ultimate Contest weekend. Really excited.
How big is the team?
10 people.
So 10 large each.
10 large
okay.
each. Yep.
That works.
Yeah, well, it's not exactly. There's different percentages, but
it's a nice,
on average.
It's a nice clean number where you can do the percentages.
Absolutely. And yeah. I tell you, Gil, when you've got investors, there's a little more pressure when it's other people's money.
Right.
You don't want to go out in week one. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so that's the first question, right? Whenever there's, you know, whether it's a $1,000 entry and it's a group of four, or whether it's a $100,000 entry and it's a group of 10, the question is always, how do you guys ultimately decide what the pick is if there's disagreement? Or do you have carte blanche? Are you the guy?
Yeah, they've all agreed that I've got final decision, but we're going to do an investor call every week, so okay. Everybody kind of has a voice in that. But I've got a solid Survivor track record. I've done 5 seasons of the regular Survivor, made it to Thanksgiving 4 times, made it past Thanksgiving twice. So, and people know I'm obviously very interested and think about this stuff nonstop. So I think that gives them a little confidence in me pulling the trigger on the final decision.
It's obsessive.
Ah. No doubt.
And you're keeping track of these numbers? Like, we're way ahead of pace here, right?
Yes. Yes. I think, is 25 in question, Gil? I think we should go over 25.
I think 25 is happening. The question is, are we getting 26 or 27?
Let's go.
Talk about 27 million
yeah.
for not for Grandissimo, obviously, but for Survivor Classic.
Yeah.
Just last question on the whole, because how many entries in Circus Survivor Classic are you doing?
10 maxing out there.
And those are all you by yourself?
Yep.
Okay. The Grandissimo thing, that dynamic is pretty amazing to me because, you know, again, even in the lower stakes one, people don't love the experience every time. Like, they do it once and they're like, I didn't really love that because, you know, I didn't like the pick that we ultimately got screwed on. And they hold a bit of, even though they say they don't hold a grudge, they kind of do. Not everybody's reasonable. This just in, right? They say they're reasonable, but they're actually not reasonable people. So I'm just curious, like, do you worry about that at all? That despite the fact that everyone's promising a lack of animosity, no matter what happens, that there will actually be that.
It's in the back of my mind, but really we've got a good team. Like, yeah. We've got a couple past champions on the team. That feels really good. And I wouldn't go into business, if you will. I wouldn't do this with folks if I was worried about that too much. So of course, late in the season with what could be 10, 12, 13 million dollars on the line, we'll see what Grandissimo gets to.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think it will get to? 69 last year?
Yeah, and remember that 69, nobody expected that. People were talking like 15 or 20.
Right.
So I'm like, well,
I said over under 30 and a half and I was ridiculed for it being that high.
And we more than doubled that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe 100 is conservative for Grandissimo and like 120 is realistic. We'll see. I'm excited to find out. Believe me.
And that got to Thanksgiving, right? Last year?
Yes.
And then it was last year. The last week was Thanksgiving, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right before
it ended on Black Friday Eagles-Bears game. Remember, there were 3 people that lost on the Ravens. And if the Eagles had won, 3 more would have advanced. But instead, there was the 6-way chop. So it ended that way. And it's the Grandissimo dynamic is interesting, Gil, because those people, when if they lost on Thanksgiving, they went either 12-1 or 13-1, as opposed to 20-0. So you could make an argument that Grandissimo is an easier contest, theoretically.
Certainly, yes.
And obviously got to put up a little more money, right?
That's the problem.
Are you even going to make it to Christmas in Grandissimo? You got to kind of maybe deprioritize the stuff at the end of the season, and it's a completely different dynamic.
Yeah, we say with Survivor Classic, the $1,000 entry that Derek Stevens, by the way, again, shout out Derek Stevens, because my line in the last episode of the Survivor documentary, which you were very prominently featured in as well, was He didn't invent Survivor. He perfected it. And I think I think it's really the case with these contests. But we say with those, okay, now, you know, the Survivor Classic, there's a, we kind of knew there was big syndicates that had like 100 entries or 150, but last year really came out. There was tons of these. But in Grandissimo, even though there's not the volume of entries, those guys are like, I mean, there's a bunch of folks in there. Some are probably as square as ever. Like, we don't know. But there's definitely, like, I know for a fact, the sharpest of the sharp in that as well. But it's Survivor. Anything can happen.
And that makes it, excuse me, that makes it exciting. Yeah. Going up against the best of the best, going toe-to-toe with the best of the best in Survivor. And if you can take it down and win that thing, it's going to feel a little sweeter because of what you just said.
Survivor, it's so obsessive that, like, even if you're, like, having a conversation on a Wednesday with your girlfriend or your wife about something, in the back of your mind, you're like, huh, Texans or... What should I do? So the podcast, how many times a week do you do the podcast? Last Man Standing.
So it's a weekly podcast, Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. We always do it live. This upcoming week, it's not going to be live because we got the Radio Row event. And
live
so,
on Twitter?
Live on YouTube and Twitter. Okay. And then after it's live, it's also on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, all those things as well.
Beautiful.
And we're really
Your co-host name?
Jason Anik. He's actually the twin brother of John Anik from UFC.
Jason is coming to the contest weekend next week. Yeah, I hope to meet him. Okay.
Yes. So, he'll be here as well as our producer, Mike. We're really looking forward to that event for sure. We had a great time at it. That was actually the first time I met Jason in person was at Ultimate Contest Weekend last year. So,
yeah, seems like a super guy. Nice guy.
Really, really good guy. We've got a great rapport together. It's a great show for sure.
And then Saturday nights, or was it Friday nights? When do you do Saturday Night Sweat. It's in the title. You do the Saturday Night Sweat show as well.
To be honest with you, I did that last year. That was a lot of fun because we do it after the Visa numbers come out. We sort of react live to those, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be a part of that or not.
Oh, okay.
All right. But that's a fun show, too. I love reacting on Saturday nights to the percentages. Like
taking nothing away from that show. I'm sure it'll be a fine show with or without you this year. I don't want to take anything away from those guys. It's probably best for you to lay something off at this point. Right? Because you're gonna lose your mind adding Grandissimo, and they're like, oh my God, I got to do these shows. I got to get my picks in.
Don't want to be spread too thin with Survivor.
What's your anxiety level every Saturday in terms of the deadline, in terms of getting your picks in?
Oh my goodness gracious. It's, you know, you set alarms. You set multiple alarms over and over. Nobody wants to be the dreaded no pick. And what are we going to have, Gil? What's the over-under on week one no picks? Is it going to be 35 or something?
I'm going to use my number, 30 and a half. Once again, 30.5.
Nobody wants to be that guy.
Someone has to do a documentary on this subject alone.
Tracking them down?
Because I fear the ones for week one, it's a long off season. God forbid something happened to some of those people. In season, I don't know what the excuse is. Less of a chance of that happening, but I don't know. Next, though, I want to get into the other part of Tony Farmer. Tony Farmer, investigative reporter. This is what I'm really here for. Whether it's Vrabel and Russini or otherwise. Coming back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
College football season is almost here, and betting it blind is a losing strategy. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide free with VSiN Pro. As previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. That's not all. VSiN Pro also gets you the NFL betting guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Try it today for just $9.99 or lock in a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander with Tony Farmer in studio. Let me read some tweets here before we get back to Tony because we got a bunch to catch up on. Xavier82, GM Gil from yesterday's NFL Futures Draft. What were your favorite selections from other participants? I love hearing which future plays others wished they had in their portfolio. I don't know if I wished I had this, but I think the most solid play of all was JVT going under on Fernando Mendoza's passing yards. That was a pretty cagey pick. Obviously, with the Raiders starting the season with Kirk Cousins, you never know when Fernando Mendoza will get in. So that was just a solid, smart play, I think. James Fessler, I wonder if Sinner's physio spray guy hedged his withdrawal on Polymarket. He might have. Somebody did. Somebody knew something. Kevin Ryan. Gil for those trending bettors, the arrogant Sean Payton. The arrogant Sean Payton is a perfect 12-0 covering the first half line since he has been the Broncos head coach. Talking about preseason, I imagine, is what you're saying. Rich Sports 1981. I sure hope Derek starts a college football contest next year. The turnout at the Westgate is just awful. Oh, wow. And Nemesis Enforcer letting us know the DC race is IndyCar, not F1. Thank you for that clarification. Donnie Miller, I contend Nick's best line of the draft, Nick Bakay, that is, was, quote, "We're down to the seeds and stems at this point. Headed out to the desert Sunday for contest signups. You around next week? I need to say hello." Yes, please. I will be here, Donnie. Please say hello. I would appreciate that. And Lou Ford says, "I like your show. I love the tennis talk. I disagree that Carlos is value at plus 175. This is similar to your minus 175 sinner bet at the French Open, which I did have. Yes, minus 175 at the French Open. Carlos coming off serious wrist injury, hasn't played in months, and will walk over the field in best of five. Not the same thing. Sinner was the heat issue, his kryptonite of heat. Carlos, listen, we don't know how he's going to play, but he's Carlitos, and I've seen the footage. You're going to be happy with plus 175 in your pocket come the business end of this tournament. Now, whether he wins or not, he's still got to win seven matches. So, listen, do I think Hodar has some value now? Do I think Artur Fis does? Sure, I do as well. But, yeah, you're not going to be sad with plus 175 in your pocket at Carlos with Carlos Alcaraz. Tony Farmer in studio, the host of the, let me get this right now, not the Last Man Standing podcast, the Last Men Standing podcast. You used to be called the other one.
Yeah,
right?
The first year we were Last Man, and then we switched to Last Men when Jason Annett came on board.
There you go. Okay. Because it's plural now.
Exactly.
Two men.
Exactly.
Becomes men. I got you. Also, there's another contest that's called that too, right?
That's true. That's
going to be it. Okay. We're going to get back to more Survivor topics. Tony's come armed with stats. With Survivor stats, which I appreciate.
Indeed.
But in between time, I have to talk to you about this. I feel like, so just observing your Twitter feed this summer, it really hasn't been about Survivor. It's been about Tony Farmer, investigative reporter. It feels to me like this, in your true heart of hearts, this is who you almost are destined to be. Is this correct? Am I off on this?
I appreciate that. Yeah, my background is in journalism, so I get a rush from breaking a story. I get a rush from looking into things, and I get a rush for like shining light on things that other people don't necessarily want a light shined on. Like, I love that quote that says, you know, journalism is sharing information that other people don't want you to hear. Everything else is PR. I really believe that in my heart. So I kind of enjoy playing a role in that.
Okay. By the way, you do a little breaking news this morning. What was your breaking news this morning?
Yeah, about 5 minutes before I came in, I just released some public documents that Deion Sanders is being sued in federal court over the Prime 21 logo. So documents have been public for a while, but nobody really noticed they were public. So I just put that out on my Twitter a couple minutes ago.
Well, at least Garucci Tran is his girlfriend. So he's got that to fall back on. Okay, but the two big stories that you have really covered extensively this summer. The first one, there really is a sports betting angle to this, which is the whole Mike Vrabel, Diana Russini thing, which I think you very correctly, like you did with the subsequent one with Kyle Shanahan, which we'll get to, but the Diana Russini, Mike Vrabel stuff, I'll use that term, really does have sports betting implications because we all bet on awards. And Russini as a voter, right, if her reporting is colored by her associations, picking my words carefully, That's a big deal for us.
Yeah.
And who knows if that's the only incident of this.
Absolutely. I would argue it's a huge deal. And what I find fascinating is that ESPN, the Associated Press, if you go back and look at any article they've written this summer about Diana Russini, they never mention that she is an AP voter. Even the AP itself, when they wrote her resignation article, did not mention that she was one of their AP voters. So it's almost this taboo subject that people don't want to talk about. Diana Russini told Josh Allen, and this is all on tape, all on video, she told Josh Allen that she was going to vote for him for MVP. She told Brandon Bean, the GM of the Bills, that she was going to vote for Josh Allen for MVP. She then went and voted for Lamar Jackson instead and admitted on a podcast that she lied to those two and she didn't vote for them. This is all public information. And then in addition to that, 2 or 3 days before the awards banquet itself, she's on a separate podcast telling the host of the podcast, they're telling a story about, you told me back then that so-and-so was definitely going to win. This is an awards voter, one of 50 awards voters, kind of running her mouth, telling her friend, who is a sports bettor, who is definitely going to win the award. Now, she's also closely associated with Mike Silver, very closely, who also has an AP vote. So it doesn't sit well with me. And some of the pushback that I get, Gil, when I bring this up is, well, her vote didn't make a difference. you know, he lost. Mike Vrabel won the Coach of the Year award by about 3 votes, and she's just 1 vote. And my perspective on that is, I'm curious about the intent. Like, sure, if she hadn't have voted, Mike Vrabel still would have won the award. And I'm on the record as saying Mike Vrabel very much deserved to win the Coach of the Year award. If I had a vote, I would have voted for him, too. He had a great year. But I'm curious about that intent, particularly because those ballots have 1 through 5 spots. So if she did want to help her friend Mike Vrabel out, we know they're very close now. If she did want to do that, she would put him at the top of her ballot, and then spots 2 through 5, she would probably leave off people like Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson that we knew were competitive. So I want to see the ballot, and that's what I'm pushing for. AP, show us the ballot, just like you did the year before when you released all ballots. And by the way, Diana Rossini's assistant Coach of the Year ballot didn't have Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson on it when they were in a job search against Mike Vrabel. I find that interesting, too.
Interesting. There's also the, forget betting for a second, there's also the whole stuff about her reporting when it came to A.J. Brown, was it, with the Titans and yeah. him ending up with the Eagles? What was that again?
Yeah, that one, that's fascinating. Ask any Eagles fan. They've been screaming about this for months. It's serious tampering concerns because Mike Vrabel is on the record as saying that he was texting A.J. Brown. We know that for sure. And so their concern is that Diana Rossini's reporting is influencing the trade markets. And let me give you an even clearer example
than
that.
And that's very, I get that.
Yeah,
totally.
Absolutely. A really clear example of that is the Julio Jones trade to the Tennessee Titans. Diana Rossini
Julio
was,
Jones, that's who it was. I'm sorry.
Well, no, A.J. Brown's another one. It's actually two separate concerns with Diana Rossini, so it's easy to get them confused. But the Julio Jones thing preceded it. And with the Julio Jones situation, she was out there, in my opinion, cooling the market and saying things like, oh, there's teams interested in Julio Jones for a first-round pick. I have reports that the Titans are interested in a first-round pick. And then, lo and behold, the Titans end up trading for Julio Jones for less than a first-round pick.
Dude, this gets me upset. I'm kind of with you on this stuff. Because, again, the betting part with the awards. But this, like, if you are manipulating the league, I mean, it's, but in the end, do you think anything's going to happen to her? I mean, I guess she's already lost her job, so it's that nothing else will happen to her ultimately.
Well, she resigned. Technically, right now, apparently she's still an AP voter. They have not made a statement about her not being an AP voter anymore.
She's still an AP voter.
I think she'll probably land on her feet and do okay. I'm kind of surprised that Mike Vrabel is sort of skated by. Like, the NFL has a personal conduct policy that talks about undermining the integrity of the league.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start talking about some of the stuff that we're talking about, I think you could make a pretty good argument that he has undermined the integrity of the league by the decisions that he's made, by, you know, coming out and saying this is laughable and not worthy of further comment.
Showed up
and
at
all
the
that.
Press conference. What was it? His new, was it a new kitten or a new
the
puppy?
Dog, yeah.
Like, dude, okay, we get it.
One of my concerns, and I don't want to get on too much of a soapbox here, but one of my concerns here is really the lack of journalism ethics that I'm seeing. Like, the Patriots beat writers not asking the tough questions to Mike Vrabel. Gil, we don't even know when this relationship started.
This is, okay, so this is my favorite part about you, Tony. I will say this because I was thinking this as well. I love your adherence to, like, nuts and bolts journalism. And I'm amazed by this, like, also with, you know, something that has nothing to do with this. Malika Andrews gets so much criticism, wrongful criticism, in my opinion, for being a journalist at times and giving background on certain players. And people don't understand, these are journalistic principles. It is her duty to do this. She is not hating on anybody. So I love that you stick to that with journalists and hold them to the fire on that. Good
for you. I appreciate that. A lot of what I'm doing is releasing public documents. It's releasing documents that I feel like are relevant and we are entitled to as members of the public. A quick example of that, you might remember the Diana Rossini body cam footage that I released. Not the Kevin O'Connell one, but we were originally told she was involved in a daring rescue of an elderly man and a dog.
Yes,
I released the body cam footage that showed that is not true.
Completely
whatsoever.
Untrue.
Yes.
Tony Farmer, more with Tony. He's got Survivor stats, and I do want to ask him about Kyle Shanahan. On the other side, it's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game, Steve Fezzik joining us at the top of the hour. It's Gil Alexander. Tony Farmer kind enough to stick around for one more segment, though. Follow him on Twitter at Tony's Market Tips. And once again, he's the host of the Last Men Standing podcast, which he does with Jason Anik once a week. Wednesday nights, you said?
Wednesday nights, 7 Eastern.
7 Eastern. Streamed live wherever you get your podcast streamed live, whether it's YouTube or also on Twitter, everywhere else. Last thing about, because I want to get back to your Survivor stats here, because Tony, again, this summer has really sort of carved out a little niche as an investigative reporter. The other one, besides Diana Russini, which I did mention again, has sports betting implications. Mm-hmm. Like, you're messing with awards already beyond awards are messed with, right? Like, in terms of, not messed with, but awards are already abstract enough where we have to handicap humans. Yeah. Well, if we know that the humans are not on the up and up to begin with, that's a problem. If we know that reporting is influencing the amount that teams end up having to trade for players based on your affiliations, I mean, that ends up tangentially being related to sports betting. This one may not be as related to sports betting, but your other big sort of thing on the heels of that was the whole Kyle Shanahan fakakta story that happened there in the Bay. Are we ever going to get to the bottom of that, or have you kind of raised your, you know, palms to the air and just been like, I guess no one wants to know?
I'm not letting that one go. My prediction is that I actually think there's a chance that the body cam footage gets released mid-season, and I think it could be a nightmare for the 49ers. I really do, because Palo Alto PD has a history of sort of putting their foot down and saying, we're not going to follow the law. And eventually, they end up having to follow the law. Like, they have, for instance...
We should explain. This was a Kyle Shanahan
car
accident where... What, he went over the middle of the road?
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan supposedly was going 20 miles per hour. He has now taken responsibility for hitting the other driver, who is a 21-year-old woman, who we've never heard from,
well,
by the way.
Well, the report initially was not that he did it, right?
Right.
That it was
that's where it gets weird. So the government database says, originally, Kyle Shanahan was not at fault and the 21-year-old driver was. That's what we were originally told. That's what the database said. Palo Alto PD is now saying that was a clerical error. It was not an attempt to pin this accident on this 21-year-old driver. It was just a clerical error. That could be proven, Gil, if we could see the accident report. But nobody wants to release the accident report right now. And kind of an interesting context for this, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but Emmanuel Acho came out, former NFL player.
Saw this.
And told the story on his podcast where he says he rear-ended somebody. He wouldn't say which team he's on, but he played for three. Browns, Giants, and Eagles. He said he rear-ended someone. He called the head of security at his team, and he told him he got in an accident. And the head of security said, send that cop away. I'm going to send you a new cop who's going to say it's the other person's fault. And that just blew my mind. I'm like, how are more people not talking about this? And not only getting someone out of trouble, but pinning it on an innocent person
is the like brutal.
Who's probably had increased insurance rates for the last 12 years and is unaware of that this even happened
and,
to them.
And the question becomes, how widespread is this?
How often does this happen? Yeah. So there's a lot of information coming out now that, like, maybe these heads of security are fixers. So what I found interesting is when the 49ers beat writers were in the room with Kyle Shanahan, when he was essentially confessing, hey, I was responsible for this, the reporter said, can we see that accident report? And that's when the head of security, Jeremy Jones, stepped in and said, no, you can't see that. So
Wow. It's
interesting. Yeah. It's interesting.
Not going to let it go, though. Good for you.
No, absolutely not.
Give them hell.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, Palo Alto PD, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but they have a history of doing things that are not exactly transparent. And that just kind of makes me a little more skeptical of this whole situation.
Man. Back to Survivor. You have come armed with stats, sir.
Yes, sir.
Let's throw up a spreadsheet and you can explain what's going on. Let's throw up this first one here.
Yeah, so these top five names you see across the top are the five winners from Circus Survivor last year. In green, we don't have to spend too much time on this one, but this is how often they took Thursday night games. We know Thursday night games were filled with carnage last year, especially that Rams 49ers game where, you know, there was that fumble at the goal line going up against Mac Jones. So this just gives you an idea of how often the champions from last year took Thursday night games, which wasn't too often.
Yeah, which for those not watching is not often at all. So one of the five ultimate survivors took them twice.
Yep.
Can we go back to that for 1 second, guys? One of them took them twice. One of them took them once. Actually, two of them took them once, and the other two took them never.
Exactly.
That's how seldom Thursday night games were picked.
By the champions, yes.
By the eventual champions,
and right. This next spreadsheet, I think, is actually even more fascinating. I found this really interesting here. This is how often folks took, the winners took the chalk. So this takes a little bit of explaining.
Ooh,
so
interesting.
I broke it down into weeks 1 through 14 chalk percentage, because after week 15, Gil, there's only 10 people left. It's kind of a different game at
that's
that point.
True.
People are announcing their picks.
Yeah.
So when you see yellow, that's chalk, meaning the number one selected team. And the orange is the number two selected team. So you always hear this survivor advice, avoid the chalk, zig while other people zag. And it's great advice in general. But as you can see here, especially in the case of Real Bro, who actually took the chalk 46% of the time on
wow.
his way to the championship.
He sure did. Yeah.
People do, winners do use chalk. Sometimes you have to eat chalk along the way. And I think this this graph does a good job of illustrating
what's,
that.
What's the red on the left, by the way?
The red are actually the losses that took place. So, for instance, week 5, you see Rams in Arizona. That was the number one chalk and the number two chalk, and that means they lost. So, obviously, the winners didn't lose that week. See what I'm saying?
Oh, they all avoided those two
exactly.
teams that week. Gotcha.
Yep.
Well, I will just put in one caveat. So, the great graphic, by the way. I love that you're keeping track of these, and this makes your podcast so great. For those who are looking at this, you see, so the yellow is the number one chalk of the week. The orange is the number two chalk of
yep.
the week. I actually would argue, and I have done this when I do my survivor strategy at the beginning of the season, I always add this, that really many times the optimal strategy in survivor is to actually take the second or third chalk. Because if you can figure out, because the assumption there being one of the bigger favorites of that week, but not the single most selected, is often, not always, right? You can mm-hmm. get tripped up on that too. But as a North Star of strategy, that ain't a bad one.
Yep. Sounds like you like the Jaguars or Lions in week one, Gil.
You know what? I haven't even looked hard enough to know. But yes, that could be. That could very well be. You have one more spreadsheet?
Yeah, a couple more, actually.
Couple more.
So
okay.
This is home and away teams. Green, we don't spend too much time on this one, but this is green is home games. Red is away teams. And then you can see the percentages at the top. So everybody was over 50% of the winners in Circus Survivor last year. They generally took home teams more than they took road teams on their way to winning.
But that's a lot of away teams still on that graphic. That's
true.
A lot of red.
Yep.
And I think
absolutely.
There's a lot of people that one of their hardcore survivor tenants is never take a road team. They took a bunch of road teams.
Gil, my philosophy is it's good to have these guidelines. Like, oh, I generally don't like away teams. I don't like division teams. But I don't think we should be too rigid and say never, because then you become narrow-minded and you close your options down. You can get into trouble that way.
100%. And the one that I cite, again, forgive me for it, but these are great, by the way, Tony. I'm so glad you brought these. One of the ones I cite before the season when I talk Survivor is one of the biggest myths is, I would take that team, but it's a division game. And our friends over at Bet Labs, Jason Lisk, and I think Tom Federico over at Team Rankings was involved in this as well. They did a great job of going and looking at, favorites and by increments, bigger and bigger and bigger increments of terms of the spread. Actually, in almost all of the categories of favorites, the favorite gets home more in division games than it does in non-division games. So that's like a complete myth.
Yes.
But people have these things ingrained in their psyche about Survivor. So that's great for just an away. There's you're right. It's more home teams, but there's a lot of red there for away.
Very well said. And you're going to like this next graph because it gets to exactly what you're talking about here with the division game.
Oh, so, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead.
It was perfect. It's a great segue, actually. Oh. So the green here is when teams are taking division games. And look at those percentages at the top. I did an adjusted division percentage because there was a weak Christmas where all the games were division and you had to take a division game. But what we're seeing is that for 3 of the 5 champions, they actually took division games more than 50% of the time. But if we can go to the next slide, watch what happens. When you do division road games, you're going to see a lot more red on this next slide. The champions from last year in Circus Survivor did not take division road games
very often. And I mentioned that is the one exception. You don't want to do that so much, right? Well, that also applies to favorites in general. Favorites on the road, right? We talk about this even with teasers. What's the one non-Stanford Wong teaser? Is road favorites of 7.5 or greater? It doesn't apply to that. Mm. And that's teasers.
Yep.
Not just and we're talking to Survivor here. So explain this one again. This is
So this is in green. That's the times that the Circus Survivor winners each took a road division team on their way to the championship. Wow. And so the percentages are at the top. You can see Real Bro, he only did that once, for instance. And these numbers are pretty darn low. So now, Gil, this isn't a perfect exercise because it would be interesting to look at, like, these folks had more than one entry. So how often did they do that on their other entries and stuff? But I do think it's a fascinating starting point to at least start the conversation about some of these trends and paths that the past winners have taken.
So great, man. I'm so glad you brought these. Again, the name of the podcast, Last Men Standing, Tony Farmer, Jason Anik, every Wednesday night. Tony, can't thank you enough, man. Thanks for and again, on the investigative stuff, you're doing a spectacular job. I appreciate what you're doing, man.
Thanks for having me, Gil.
Tony Farmer, everybody, right here on A Numbers Game. Steve Fezzik, Fezzik Fridays next. Coming back right here at VSiN.